Louis put away his sword and started forward, and the others followed him. None of them had anything to say. In an empire whose golden age was full of wonders, this was still something very new and marvelous. People saw them coming and disappeared unhurriedly into the nearest dwelling. There was something not quite right about them, but Louis couldn't put his finger on it. He came to a halt at the edge of the city and looked about him for some clues as to what to do next.
I suppose our home must seem impressive to outsiders, but you should see it in the spring. The whole place really comes alive then.
They all looked around sharply, and there was a short, stocky woman smiling at them. Louis hadn't heard her coming. He made himself take his hand away from the gun at his side.
You have a beautiful home. I had no idea.
We don't advertise. We don't want to attract sightseers. It's all very efficient, you know. The plant life is nourished by the carbon dioxide we breathe out and the wastes we deposit in it. We're all part of one big symbiosis, really.
Do I take it you're Helen Adair?
You take it correctly, Deathstalker. About time you got here. We've been expecting you for days.
Moon again?
Helen grinned and nodded.
He really can see the future sometimes, which raises all kinds of philosophical questions, which mostly we try not to think about for the sake of a quiet life. So that's what a reptiloid is.
Louis, she's naked.
No kidding.
Helen Adair was blonde, pretty enough, with a good if slightly over-muscled figure, and had not a stitch of clothing on. Her skin was a glowing pink, of the shade Louis usually associated only with gums, and her only adornment was a few flowering vines she'd wrapped around her waist. She smiled at them all.
No one bothers with clothes here. Why should we? The city is tailored to our every need. And the rain and what little weather there is in our balanced ecosystem doesn't bother us. In the old days, the colonists had to hide their bodies because of what leprosy had done to them. But the disease is long gone, and we are all in excellent condition, as you can see. With the red brain on our side, this is a perfect world for people to live in. So we're naked. I trust this isn't going to be a problem.
She was looking at Brett as she said that, and he quickly averted his eyes from her breasts.
Don't let him bother you. Just hit him if he gets annoying, we do.
Come with me, and stay close. We don't normally allow outsiders into our city, and we wouldn't now if Moon hadn't told me one of you was a Deathstalker. That is a worshipped name here.
You know where Moon is?
You'll get to see him in time. For now, there is something else here he wants you to see. Follow me.
She led them through the living city, down leafy ways and through petaled corridors, across great open squares with blossoming displays. All the structures had rounded organic shapes, and fat pulpy flowers formed living mosaics. These were always changing, as the flowers opened and closed in subtly different positions, so that the images were never still. Louis was particularly taken with a wide, beautiful face that slowly widened its smile and winked one eye as he passed. Perfumes hung heavy on the air, heady and stimulating, like taking in heaven with every breath. And everywhere now, the colonists strolled naked through their Eden, calm and unhurried and utterly indifferent to the strangers in their midst. Louis and Jessamine did their best to keep their gazes to themselves. Brett tried, not particularly successfully. He was wishing he still had a camera in his eye. He could have sold this recording for a fortune, several fortunes. Rose and Saturday didn't care at all. Human nudity meant nothing to them.
I don't see any toil. What do people do here?
We have no need or wish for business or machinery. Essentially, we're all gardeners. We tend to the needs of the plants. We prune, we dig out weeds, we prevent overcrowding, and we encourage propagation in some species and discourage it in others. We also keep a watchful eye on the more aggressive examples and destroy any that threaten to develop their own form of sentience. One red brain is quite enough to cope with. In return for our services, the red brain allows us to fell trees, gather fruit, and harvest crops, all of which have a ready market waiting for them out in the Empire. There are many species here unknown and unparalleled on any other world.
Damn right.
Ooh! Jessamine elbowed him in the ribs, and Brett reluctantly tore his gaze away from a particularly statuesque redhead.
They have fruits here, the taste of which you wouldn't believe. Grapes that make wine to die for. And any furniture made from Lacrimae Christi lumber can pretty much command its own price. Goods from this planet are always in short supply. The colonists see to that, right, Alan? Treat them mean, keep them keen, and the price never goes down. Scientists have been trying to synthesize your products in their labs for centuries, to no result. Though there are those who say the Esper drug came from here originally, distilled from the nerve fibers of the red brain itself.
You had to spoil the mood, didn't you? Nasty little man. Here we are, walking through paradise, and all you can think of is drugs.
Another reason we're not too keen on outsiders. There are always those unwilling to leave good enough alone. Certain business interests are always trying to set up shop here, legally or illegally. They want to introduce mechanization, to increase productivity. They want to set up labs to turn our produce into drugs. They'd strip mine this world to feed the greed of their customers if they could. They hear we have no weapons, no army, and they think we're defenseless. The fools. The jungle is our weapon, and the only defense we need. The red brain watches over us, and Tobias Moon, of course.
What is the relationship between the red brain and Tobias Moon?
Lewis had been trying to turn the conversation that way for some time, without seeming too eager. He needed to know just what he'd be dealing with when the time finally came to confront Tobias Moon.
They exist in perfect symbiosis, just as we do with our cities. The red brain takes the long view, the wide view, while Moon remains focused on the everyday needs and problems of those who live and work here. If you like, the red brain is our god, and Tobias Moon, his prophet.
No, I don't think I like that idea at all.
It's just a way of thinking about it. Don't worry, our god doesn't require sacrifices. Unless it's been a really bad harvest. Joke! Try thinking of the red brain as a great computer and Moon its programmer. Does that help?
Just a little.
Rose and Brett hung back so they could talk quietly together. Lewis and Jessamine were clearly charmed by the manifold delights of Mission City, and that worried Brett. In his experience, the prettiest face was always a disguise for the greatest danger, and the knife in the back always came when you were least expecting it.
You know, Rose, I can't shake off the feeling that we're walking blithely into some carefully concealed trap.
Rose nodded.
Ugly place, overgrown with weeds. This is no way for people to live. No action, no challenges. Bunch of damn tree huggers. Living in harmony with the natural world, my ass. The natural world will bite your ass off given half a chance. You have to tame it, regulate it, stamp it underfoot. The jungle's more honest than this place. Real nature is kill or be killed, red in tooth and claw. Always has been. The Deathstalker had better smarten up and keep his eyes open, or we could all end up as fertilizer for their mighty god plant.
Oh, thanks a whole bunch. Now I feel even worse, if that's possible.
Brett peered unhappily about him.
This isn't my kind of place either. Nothing worth stealing, no end to con. There are supposed to be roots and weeds here that Dr. Happy and his breed would pay serious money for, but I couldn't pick them out of all this mess to save my life. And how can you bribe information out of people who already think they're living in paradise, the fools? God, I'd kill for a drink. This place is far too healthy for the likes of me. I want to go home.
I do hope you realize just how rare it is for Tobias Moon to agree to meet with you, Deathstalker. In fact, I don't think he's seen any off-worlder in person for almost 150 years. After the legends began circulating, we got a lot of tourists here. Moon had been made into a hero and a myth, without his permission, and we had pilgrims turning up here by the shipload, all determined to worship at Moon's feet and pester him for wisdom. So he withdrew into the embrace of the red brain and vanished from sight. Only a very few people know his location these days, and he rarely speaks, even to them. To speak with Moon in person is the highest privilege you can aspire to in this world. And then you turn up, and nothing will do but that Moon has to speak to you immediately. Lots of people have their noses out of joint over that. But you're a Deathstalker, and that name carries a lot of currency here. Owen made all this possible. He came here when we were all lepers, outcast and despised by the rest of humanity. He walked among us and taught us how to be strong and proud again. He fought alongside us with the Haydenmen and the Grendels and worked miracles in our defense.
Does Moon ever talk about Owen?
No. He never talks about those days. Perhaps he will to you. We don't know why he's so keen to talk to you or what he has to say. When you've finished your conversation, whatever turns it may take, I suggest you get back to your ship and get the hell off this world. A lot of people are going to be really upset about being excluded from this meeting. You may be a Deathstalker, but you're clearly no Owen. And as for your companions...
What about us?
Rose, put that sword away.
Rose didn't react as she advanced on Helen.
I've had enough of this snotty cow. So up herself just because she lives in a cabbage patch. Treating us like shit, like we're only here on sufferance. We're here to talk to Moon, bitch, and you don't get a say in the matter.
I'd put that sword away if I were you.
Helen hadn't budged an inch, and she met Rose's cold gaze squarely.
Or what? You'll bash me over the head with a flower?
Something like that.
Blood-red vines snapped out of the surroundings like living whips and wrapped themselves around Rose in a moment. They tightened painfully, cutting into Rose's flesh through her leathers. She tried to struggle, and more vines lashed out to envelop her. Brett's hand went to the gun at his side, but Jessamine was quickly there beside him, her hand on top of his, holding it firmly in place. Saturday looked to Lewis, who shook his head quickly. Lewis turned to Helen.
Please release our friend. She may be crazy, but she means well. Mostly. Either way, she's with me, and I vouch for her behavior.
Helen looked at Rose.
This is our world. It harbors and protects us. It is alive and aware because the red brain is in every part of it. And Moon is always listening. Now, are you going to behave, or shall I have the city thread a barbed vine up your ass, through your guts, and out your eye?
She'll behave. I guarantee it. On my honor as a Deathstalker.
She's not worth it. She'll betray you in the end. Her kind always does.
She is my friend, sworn to my cause. Now release her. Unless you want to take me on as well.
Helen looked at Lewis thoughtfully for a moment, and then nodded abruptly. The vines slowly loosened and unwrapped themselves from around Rose. Brett helped her pull free, and everyone watched to see what she would do. Rose put her sword away and nodded to Lewis, as calm and cold as always.
Thank you, Deathstalker. She would have killed me, you know, just to make a point. She has her own agenda here. Don't trust her.
Everyone has their own agenda.
Helen brought them to the heart of the city. St. Beatrice's mission, or what was left of it. The original rough buildings had been carefully maintained down the years as a shrine to the memory of the blessed St. Beatrice, the simple nun who came to tend the dying lepers of Lacrimae Christi, just because she thought it was the right thing to do. Lewis and his companions were astonished. They had no idea the original mission still existed. No one in the Empire did. It was a place of legend, of mystery, of awe. Helen left them at the gates to the courtyard and said she'd be back for them later, after they'd seen what Moon wanted them to see. For a long time, none of them moved. It seemed a small and shabby place, compared to its mythic status in the story of Owen Deathstalker and St. Beatrice, but just being there took their breath away. To be where legends had been carved out of history, to walk where heroes walked. Lewis moved slowly forward across the packed earth courtyard, and the others followed him. They were all affected to some degree, even Saturday. The place fairly radiated weight and significance. Vital matters had been decided here, where a small group of people had beaten off overwhelming inhuman odds. Stretching away before them were two rows of wooden stakes, forming a long path, and on every spike was impaled the severed head of a Grendel. There were hundreds of the ugly things, shining scarlet heart-shaped heads that had no human element in them. Grendels were living killing machines, bastard children of the Madness Maze, long and long ago. Deadly, implacable, unstoppable. Except here. Jessamine pressed in close beside Lewis, holding his hand almost painfully tight.
These creatures died over 200 years ago. Why haven't their heads decayed?
Maybe Grendels don't decay. They were famous for being indestructible.
I killed one.
Yeah, but you cheated.
I won, didn't I?
You killed one. Owen and Hazel killed dozens. Sometimes with their bare hands.
You're right. That is impressive.
I would have liked to meet a Grendel.
Saturday flexed his foreclaws wistfully.
No, you wouldn't. Trust me on this. They weren't natural creatures. They were created to be unstoppable. They existed only to kill. Their armor could shrug off energy weapons. And Owen and Hazel went head to head with hundreds of them here. And won. Look at those heads.
Oh, they give me the creeps. Like something out of a nightmare. How could Owen have defeated something like this?
Because he was a death stalker. That's why we have to find him. Because we need him now, more than ever.
They finally left the rows of Grendel heads behind them and came to the old infirmary. It was just a wooden hut with open windows and a single doorway. Lewis led the way in, and the air was so thick with ghosts that he could hardly breathe it. He'd seen this place recreated in 100 docudramas. Owen's Last Redoubt and the fight against the invading Grendels. So many dramatic scenes had been reenacted here, among the most famous actors in the Empire, of Owen and Hazel and Beatrice. All of it legend, because no one was left to tell the truth of it. But in this indisputably real place, the walls were lined with data crystals and private view screens, promising to reveal the truth at last. And in the middle of the room, on a raised bier under a single gentle light, lay what looked very like a coffin. They all gathered slowly around it and looked in to see the well-preserved body of a woman in a nun's clothing. For a long time, no one said anything.
That can't be her, can it? Not her. Not...
Saint Beatrice.
It's got to be some kind of model.
Lewis studied a plaque at the head of the coffin.
Not according to this plaque. It's her. Preserved here. All these years.
Now that is seriously gross. And not half creepy. Dead bodies on display. This is barbaric. Not to mention sick.
I wouldn't disagree. But I don't think it's a viewpoint we should share with the good people of this city. This is obviously a sacred place for them.
Lewis looked at the body's expressionless face and tried to feel something, some of the awe he'd felt on entering the mission. But the truth was, she could have been anybody. Whoever had preserved her body had done a good job, at the expense of taking all the personality out of her face. Lewis bowed his head respectfully anyway. The body seemed very small for a woman whose legend had become so huge. Every man, woman, and child in the Empire knew the story of the Blessed Saint Beatrice, who gave up wealth and standing to follow her faith. And now here she was, a waxy, shrunken display piece in a museum most people didn't even know existed. Eventually, they turned to the data crystals set out on shelves. They checked the titles, but most of it seemed to be dull history about how the colonists built their great biocities and created a paradise out of hell. But one crystal was labeled Owen's Defense of the Mission, and everyone wanted to see that. Lewis plugged it into a display screen, and they all stood and watched.
Yes, I was there. And I'll remember it for as long as
I... It turned out to be a series of interviews with lepers who'd survived the defense. When it was over, Lewis and his companions looked at each other.
Oh, now that really was bullshit. Even the official legends never said...
It has to be exaggerated. Memories embellished over the years.
I mean, no one could do things like that. All right, the official version has Owen and Hazel as first-class warriors, deaf on two legs and unbeatable with a weapon in their hands. And there are the miracles they're supposed to have performed, but triggering earthquakes just by frowning, blowing Grendels apart just by looking at them, shooting lightning bolts from their hands... Owen bringing himself back from the dead.
They went through the maze. And they were never fully human after that. Everyone who knew them said so. And some of the miracles really did happen. There were news recordings of them at the time, even if they're lost to us now. And some of the Apocrypha hinted things like this, that Owen and Hazel must still be alive somewhere, because after what the maze had done to them, they couldn't die.
This is seriously creeping me out. I thought Deathstalker's Lament was over the top when I starred in it, but this... If Owen and Hazel really could do things like that, they weren't human anymore. No more human than the Grendels. People aren't supposed to be able to do things like that.
It's not real. It can't be. Just stories grown in the telling. Owen was a great warrior, and that's enough. It's all anyone needs.
It's legend. But if we doubt this telling of the story, can we trust the official legends either? At least these people actually knew Owen and Hazel. Moon's still here, still alive. But I saw Owen and Hazel, Jack Random and Ruby Journey. Saw the real people in contemporary records. Shub showed them to me, and the dust plains of memory. Real people, stirring, moving. Incredibly impressive people, but not this. Not fairy tales.
Does it matter?
Of course. It's everything. Because only a legend has any chance of stopping the terror when it comes.
They all stood together and thought about that for a while. Lewis turned off the display screen and put the data crystal back in its case on the shelf. He couldn't afford doubts like this. He had to be strong. Just as Owen had to be what he was believed to be, or the Empire was doomed.
Come on, Lewis. Let's get out of here.
He went through the madness maze. He came out changed. More than human. Everyone said so. You all saw what Carrion could do, and Captain Silence. The stories have to be true, because if they aren't, then Owen is dead, and he isn't coming back. And our quest is useless.
Let's go. We'll talk to Moon. He can tell us the truth, whatever it is.
Moon wanted us to come here. To see this shrine, and what it contains. Why?
Perhaps he wanted us to know the truth at last. To let us see what Owen could do. So that we'd have the confidence and the faith to continue on our quest.
Yeah, right.
Shut up, Brett.
I don't know what to believe anymore. So many things and people I believed in turned out to be not what I thought them to be. Even me. How can I believe in something like this?
Because he was a death stalker, and so are you.
Outside the mission, Helen Adair was waiting for them. She didn't ask any questions, and none of them felt like saying anything, so they walked back to the boundary of the city in silence. They made one stop along the way. Lewis insisted on being allowed to see the city's cemetery, where the old leper colonists were buried. There was one grave he needed to see. He found it easily enough. Just a simple grave and a simple headstone, bearing the single name, Vaughn. Looked no different from any of the hundreds of other graves. He checked with the cemetery custodian, who looked up the old records and confirmed that there really was a body in the grave. Lewis thanked the man and went back to look at the grave again, while his companions waited more or less patiently at the gates to the cemetery. Vaughn was dead. Long dead. So who had come to Lewis at Douglas's coronation to give him Owen's ring? A ghost? Once, Lewis would have said he didn't believe in such things, but Captain Silence's death had been widely reported, and still he came to help fight the good fight on Logris and on Seeley, if that really was John Silence. You had to have faith, Lewis decided finally. In the end, it all comes down to faith. To have faith in the things that matter. To be a Deathstalker. Helen Adair took them to the edge of the city and pointed them on their way. No one else was there to see them off. Lewis checked the directions carefully against his internal compass and quickly calculated the distance to be just under a mile. Helen Adair made it clear she had no intention of going with them. This was their pilgrimage. Lewis and his companions said goodbye and thanks with varying amounts of sincerity and set off into the Crimson Jungle again. The going was easier this time. Someone had spoken with the Red Brain, and it had spoken with its separate parts. Although there was no easing of general aggression in the jungle as a whole, somehow the individual plants swept back out of the party's way, forming an open trail to take them to Tobias Moon. At first, Lewis had thought Brett was up to his old tricks again, but one look at the con man's uneasy face was enough to correct that impression. Brett didn't approve of other people pulling his own tricks on him. It was a steady, much less strenuous march this time, and they kept up a good pace. Lewis was back in the lead again, and had to keep himself from pushing the pace too hard. Part of him was desperate to get to the Hayden men at last, and finally get some straight answers about Owen in the maze. And part of him was really scared about what those answers might be. It is an intimidating thing to meet legends in the flesh. About half a mile outside Mission City, they came across the rusting remains of some misguided logging company's attempt to introduce high-tech equipment. The huge machines, several stories high, lay wrecked and abandoned in the jungle, half buried under crawling vines and slowly shifting scarlet foliage. Crimson tracers had invaded every grill and opening, and raindrops slid constantly down the red rusted metal. Steel panels bulged outwards from the pressure of vegetable growth within, and dark, heavy branches had smashed through the steel glass windows. Shafts of light moved slowly across drooping cranes and saws and cutting arms, like great beached whales of rusted steel defeated by slow, implacable forces. They were already overgrown and being absorbed by the scarlet jungle. When the party finally reached the exact coordinates provided by Helen Adair, there was nothing there. Just a small clearing in the middle of nowhere. No different from a dozen others they'd already passed through. Knee-high grass of a shocking pink undulated before them in slow, rippling waves. Lewis and his companions looked about them, feeling distinctly upset. It had been a long walk, the rain was falling more heavily, and they were all feeling hot and sticky.
Oh, we've been sold a pup, haven't we? I don't want to say I told you so, but I did. They never meant for us to talk to their precious pet oracle.
Hush, Brett. This is where we're meant to be, so there must be something here. Somewhere. Right, Lewis? Lewis?
I'm thinking.
There is something here.
The reptiloid turned his great head slowly back and forth.
I can feel something. Perhaps because the jungle reminds me of home a little. There's definitely something here that doesn't belong.
So where is Moon? Hiding up a tree, maybe? Lying down in the long grass, perhaps? Having a bit of a snooze? We've been had! There's no one here! There isn't a hut or a dwelling or a big lump in the ground for as far as I can see, and I can see pretty damn far. And I'm wet! I hate being wet!
Something's here, and it knows we're here.
The ground trembled under their feet. The pink grass waved wildly, and then the center of the clearing bulged suddenly upwards, the ground cracking apart, throwing dark earth in all directions.
Holy Jesus!
Pale roots and tubers and wet, crawling things surged up out of the broken earth and were thrust aside as a vast, new shape emerged slowly and relentlessly from its earthy bed. A steel hull, smeared with wet mud, emerged from the gaping crevasse, rising up and up, until at last the wreck of an old-fashioned space yacht filled the clearing, buoyed up and brought to the surface again by the concentrated will of Tobias Moon and the Red Brain. The old ship slowly settled into its new place, half its bulk still sunken in the ground, the battered prow straining towards the overcast sky and open air for the first time in decades.
Dear God. That's Owen's ship. That's Sunstrider 2. I'd know it anywhere.
Of course. They crash-landed here. The ship was never recovered. We're probably the first people to see it in 200 years. Is Moon inside it?
I suppose so. I guess we go in.
A bad move. That thing looks like a tomb to me. Or a prison. Or a trap.
There could be anything in there. Any...
Ow!
All that weapons training I put you through and you're still a scaredy cat.
Brett rubbed his head.
I'm a live scaredy cat. I can't help feeling there's a definite connection between the two.
We go in. If Moon is in there, I really don't think we should keep him waiting.
Lewis smiled slowly.
Look at it. This is Owen's ship. It'll be like walking into legend. Into his life.
You're really easy to impress, Deathstalker, you know that? All right, it's a famous ship, and I could probably arrange a really sweet salvage deal if you'd let me, which you won't. But the ship is a mess. Look at it. Oh, this had to have been a really bad landing. The hull split open in several places. There's no sign of rear assemblies. And Christ alone knows what happened to the sensor spikes. They must have hit the ground like the wrath of God.
Exactly. And they walked away from it. Think how tough, how more than human they would have had to have been to do that.
So what do we do? Knock on the hull and wait to be invited in?
There's a really big opening down by the engine compartment. And there are some strange energies radiating from it.
They all looked at the Reptiloid.
You can see energies?
Oh, yes. And these are really weird energies.
Then that's our invitation. Lewis led them down the length of the Sunstrider 2, heading for the stern. Up close, the old yacht looked rougher, realer than it had in his imagination. He'd heard tales about this ship all his life, but he could have flown a ship like this. He had the skills. He still felt a tingle of almost superstitious awe as he approached the great rent in the steel hull over the engine chamber. Something had smashed right through the reinforced hull, leaving a rent a dozen feet high and almost as wide. It didn't look like crash damage. Lewis swallowed hard and led the way in, moving cautiously through the gloomy interior, walking where Owen and his companions had walked long ago. There was a clear path to the engine compartment, but scarlet vegetation had worked its way into the yacht over the years, lining the interior bulkheads with thick mattings of fibrous materials. It grew thicker as Lewis led the way further in, until they were all walking hunched over through a narrow tunnel like a soft, furry red artery. Finally, in an enclosed space that at once, but no longer, held the ship's star drive, they found Tobias Moon. The living fibers lining the chamber glowed with a soft, rosy light, illuminating the Hayden man as he sat cross-legged on the floor, his head bowed forward, his chin resting on his chest. His eyes were closed, and he didn't seem to be breathing. He was a man's size and shape, but even still and silent, there was something of dread and awe about him. He looked to be tall, but not as tall as Rose, broad and muscular, but not so much as Lewis. None of that mattered. This was Tobias Moon. He was surrounded and enveloped by a mass of barbed and thorned vines that over the years had pierced and penetrated his body in 100 places, as though plugging him into the mass plant consciousness of the Red Brain. Lewis studied the slowly pulsing crimson strands that cocooned Moon's body, and tried to work out exactly what kind of place his quest had brought him to. A coffin? Or a regeneration tank? Was this just another preserved body like St. Beatrice? Or did life still move in what had, after all, been a cyborg body? One of the infamous augmented men.
The energies are very harsh here. Unhealthy. They hurt my head. I've never seen anything like them before. I don't think we should stay here.
I can feel something. Look at what the jungle's done to him, Lewis. Do you suppose it did that to him while he was still alive? Can we cut him free?
I don't think we're meant to. I think this is something he chose.
Moon lifted his head. And they all jumped. Moon slowly turned his head to look at his visitors, and a fierce golden glow filled his eyes, unnervingly bright in the rosy-tinted light of the engine chamber. A chill ran through Lewis. No one had seen the glowing golden eyes of a Hayden man in centuries, the mark of Cain, and the cyborgs humanity had created, the augmented men who became the enemies of humanity, the butchers of Brahman, driven by their merciless creed of transformation through technology to pitilessly murder and destroy. They were long gone now, boogeymen to frighten children. But Moon still lived.
Welcome, Deathstalker.
His face had subtly inhuman lines.
If you've come to me, you must be in serious trouble. It's been a long time since I spoke with a Deathstalker. You'd better have a really good reason for disturbing me. I was happy in the embrace of the Red Brain. It reminds me of the mass consciousness of the Hayden Men. It was necessary to destroy them, but still I miss the closeness, that intimate connection, the never being alone. The Red Brain and I have joined in symbiosis. It is not the same, but it will do. Together, we regulate and control plant growth and activity to cooperate with the colonists. They are a part of the ecosystem too, and a part of us, our children. It is a peaceful life for one who was created to wage war. It is all I ever really wanted. Now you come, Deathstalker. And like your predecessor, I have no doubt you bring bad news.
Moon swiveled his head back and forth experimentally.
I don't inhabit this body much anymore. I live in a larger body, with a larger perspective. But here I am, because I never could say no to a Deathstalker.
You honor me, Sir Moon. I wouldn't have disturbed you if the whole Empire were not at risk.
It's always something like that. Deathstalkers never bother themselves with the smaller things. I know why you're here. I'm still linked into the Empire's comm systems. I've been updating myself while we've been talking. So, the terror has come at last. The worlds are falling apart. And you have been outlawed. Time plays the same patterns over and over again. And Owen and I are legends now. He wouldn't have approved. But then, he was always the best of us. I could have been so much more. Grown and performed miracles as he did. But I never wanted that. Or perhaps I was afraid to embrace the change and the power as he did. I don't think Owen was ever really afraid of anything, except failing those he loved. Still, this is the life I chose, and I have been happy enough here.
We need to talk about Owen, Simoon.
Jessamine moved in beside Lewis, cutting off what promised to be a rambling conversation.
Is Owen still alive somewhere? Where should we look for him?
I haven't seen Owen since he left this world. Though sometimes, I think I talk with him in dreams. The link the maze formed between all of us was a strong one, and I don't know if even death could break it. A voice came to us after the defeat of the Recreated, and said that Owen died bravely, saving us all. It was the kind of thing he would do. I know what's happening in the Empire, Deathstalker. Much has happened since you left Logris. The old king, William, has been arrested for treason. The young king, Douglas, is in the hands of his enemies. You must make a decision. Go back and save your friend, or go on
and perhaps save the Empire.
Lewis, you can't go back. Not after we've come so far.
But Douglas...
would understand. He can take care of himself.
There's bound to be a trap waiting for you there. It's what I would do.
But where can we go if Owen really is dead? And are you sure of that, Sir Moon? I've been given reason to believe that he could still be alive, somewhere.
He was a great man. A warrior, yes, but so much more besides. I still miss him, after all this time. He saved my soul, you know. After the Grendel killed me in the old caverns under Hayden, the reborn Haydenmen brought me back to life, but only as one of them. I had access to most of my old memories, but they meant nothing to me, until Owen came and brought me back into the light, back to myself again. Everything I am, I owe to him.
Brett stuck an inquisitive hand into the air.
Excuse me, you were dead and then you came back to life again?
Yes.
Just checking.
What was it like, being dead?
Restful. In a way, we all died when we went through the madness maze. What came out the other side was something new. We were reborn, remade into new life. Owen's still out there somewhere. I believe that. I have to believe that.
Moon paused and looked at Lewis again.
Has anyone ever tried to recreate my old people, the Hayden men?
No. We don't believe in cyborgs anymore.
Probably just as well. We were never what the maze intended.
What did the maze intend?
Go there. Go to Hayden. Go to the Madness Maze and ask it. Every answer to every question you ever had can be found in the maze.
Brett looked at Rose.
Shit. Didn't you just know he was gonna say that?
We saw the story of Owen's defense of the mission at Mission City. It told of Owen doing amazing things. Impossible things. You were there, Sir Moon. Did Owen really do all the things they said he did?
Oh, yes. All of that. And more. He was always the best of us.
There was something in the way he said that that told Lewis the audience was over, and Moon had said all he was prepared to say, but still Lewis persisted. There were things he had to say, even though it wasn't easy being stubborn in the face of those terrible glowing golden eyes.
Sir Moon, it may be that you are the last living maze survivor. Even if your abilities never matched Owen's, you are still a very powerful individual. Come with us. Help us stop the terror. You have a duty. To us and the Empire.
No. You don't need me. You need Owen. Because I have seen the terror, and I know what it really is. Only Owen can hope to stop it. Go to Hayden, Deathstalker. It is your destiny.
You know what the terror is? Tell us!
No. You're not ready yet.
Oh, the hell with that!
Brett had had a bellyful of hints and half-answers. He reached out with his mind and hit Moon's thoughts with the strongest esp compulsion he could fashion, only to discover that Moon's mind was a hell of a lot bigger than any human mind had a right to be. It kept growing and unfolding before him, expanding in directions Brett couldn't even follow. And above and beyond Moon's thoughts, there was the red brain. The smallest part of it recognized Brett's tiny presence and thrust him back into his own head. Brett would have fallen if Rose hadn't grabbed and steadied him. Lewis and Jessamy looked at Brett, startled. Saturday fell into an automatic defensive crouch. And as they looked away, Moon's head slowly lowered itself again, his chin resting on his chest, the golden glare fading from his eyes. The crimson vegetation lining the chamber began to stir ominously. The whole ship began to shake, and the floor lurched under their feet.
Brett! What have you done?
Why do you always blame me?
Because it's always your fault!
Yell at him later! We have to get out of here! I think this ship's going back down into the earth again!
Lewis looked quickly to the narrow tunnel that was their only way out. The fibrous lining was writhing slowly, expanding, sealing off the tunnel inch by inch, and the soft rosy light was slowly going out.
Saturday, you go first. Make us an exit.
The reptiloid grinned and plowed forward. The others hurried close behind him, Rose hauling Brett along with her. The whole ship was shuddering now, the floor seeming to fall away beneath their feet. Daylight showed up ahead, and they charged down the tunnel and out of the sinking ship.
Keep moving!
They hit the pink grass running, and didn't stop till they were on the other side of the clearing. Only then did they turn and look back, just in time to watch the last of that battered wreck, the Sunstrider 2, disappear back underground as the Earth swallowed it up again. The grass waved wildly, the Earth closed over the lowering prow, and slowly the clearing grew still again, with nothing to show that anything had ever been there.
Your audience is over.
Helen spoke from behind them.
I trust you found it helpful. It's time for you to leave, Lacrimae Christi. Hope you had a good time. Be sure to sign the visitor's book at the starport. Have a safe journey. Don't come back.
Back on the bridge of the Hereward, heading away from Lacrimae Christi at speed, Brett Random was still fuming.
Cool, the bums rush. All that guff about how honored they were to meet a Deathstalker, and we end up being booted off the planet.
You were the one stupid enough to try to compel someone connected to the mass consciousness of an entire planet. You're lucky your brains aren't dribbling out your ears. All right, 10 out of 10 for ambition, Brett, but minus several thousand for diplomacy.
I don't know about the rest of you, but after meeting Tobias Moon in the spooky, if not downright unnerving flesh, I'm in even less of a hurry to get to Hayden than I was before. We all died in the maze? Just what I needed to hear.
Lewis sat in the pilot seat, frowning thoughtfully.
But he did say it was the only place we could find answers.
I still say Mistworld. You want answers, you can buy them there. You can buy anything on Mistworld, particularly with the cargo we're carrying.
While you were gone, I took the liberty of exchanging most of the data crystals for food supplies. We were running very short.
Brett tugged at his hair with both hands.
You swapped a small fortune in alien porn for a bunch of fresh fruit?
Fruit is very good for you. I cut you some vegetables too, and some preserves. Not to mention, a case of parsnip wine.
Brett looked to the sword at Rose's side.
Kill me now. Put me out of everyone's misery.
If you don't stop whining, I'll have Saturday do it.
Brett looked at the grinning reptiloid and shut up. A blazing light appeared on the bridge. It was too fierce to look at directly and forced everything else into silhouette. It slowly consolidated, became heavier, and there was a growing sense of presence on the bridge as something from above and beyond the material world drew closer, sinking into the world, becoming solid, becoming real. The light snapped off, and they all stood blinking at a harsh-faced woman with a shock of blonde hair.
Oh my God! I know you! Lewis, that's Diana Virtue! I saw hollows of her when I was researching my part in Deathstalker's Lament for last year's revival tour.
Jenny Psycho? But she's dead?
Now there's a name no one's dared to use to my face in a long time. And yes, Deathstalker, I am dead.
A lot of that going around.
Lewis and Jessamine were on their feet, clinging to each other. Even Rose looked distinctly unsettled. There was something overpowering about Diana Virtue's presence, as though she was realer than everyone else. Saturday had retreated to the rear of the bridge, compelled by his instincts into a submissive posture. Diana smiled coldly upon them all.
118 years ago, the Grey Train and the Shatter Freak ambushed and murdered me. I trusted someone I had every reason to believe was my friend. And I walked right into it, alone and far from help. Even so, they were lucky to beat me. I was old and tired and feeling particularly low that day. Perhaps I wanted to die and just used them as an excuse. It's possible. Anyway, my body died that day, torn apart by psionic razor storms. I never was a maze alumni, after all. Just an Esper who got an unexpected boost. My dying mind was picked up by the Oversoul and made a part of it. I exist now as a thought in the great mass mind of the Espers. But sometimes I draw on the energies of the Oversoul and manifest in the real world again for a time, when I'm needed, and no one else will do.
Why are you here?
Lewis took a little pride on how steady his voice was, under the circumstances.
The Oversoul has been following your progress ever since you left Logris, through Brett Random.
Brett poked his head out from behind Rose's shoulder.
Hey! I never joined the Oversoul!
You're an Esper. We all drink from the same pool.
Diana looked at Rose.
Sometimes we see you there, too. Isn't that interesting?
Fascinating. To what exactly do we owe the unnerving pleasure of your company?
You must go to Chandrakor, to the Forsaken World. I crash-landed the old Deathstalker standing there after the last battle.
Yes? My father gave me the coordinates.
I know. Go there, and in the old castle you will find things you need and things you need to know. It is your heritage, Deathstalker.
Will you be joining us?
No. I don't belong in the waking world anymore. I'm just a dream of who I used to be. I'm here only as a favor to my father, John Silence. We dead people must stick together.
She smiled for the first time, and then disappeared. They could still feel her presence on the bridge for several seconds, slowly fading away as she receded in a direction they couldn't even name. Finally, she was gone, and a certain tension left the bridge.
Doesn't anyone stay dead anymore?
Brett tentatively took a step out from behind Rose.
I really would like to be excused now, please. I can hear some clean underwear calling my name. And then I think I'd like to lie down for a while.
Why doesn't anyone ever want to join my group?
Brett and Rose left the bridge.
Oz, set a course for Chandrakor. It appears Hayden will have to wait for a while, after all.
Deathstalker Return, Brotherly Love, and My Red Heaven is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2004, Simon R. Green. Production copyright 2007, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Richard Rowan, Michael Glenn, David Coyne, Vanessa Benjamin, Sonny Lasky, Corey James, Terrence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Kate Torrey, Colleen Delaney, M.B. Van Dorn, Karen Carbone, Thomas Penny, and Chris Rowan. Directed and adapted for graphic audio by Rick Rowan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Chris Rowan and Dan Smith. The Deathstalker Return theme was composed by Dan Smith. Additional original music by Chris Rowan and Dan Smith. If you enjoy Deathstalker Return, be sure to look for the graphic audio version of DC Comics' Infinite Crisis, available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net.
Available now from Graphic Audio. Doomsday Warrior 2, Red America. Doomsday Warrior, Red America. Roxanne made the trip to the interrogation area within 5 minutes of receiving the call from Wrath. He walked into the brightly lit room, antiseptically clean, where the captured Russian officer was now strapped into one of the red mindbreakers that had been taken from a convoy several months before. It was the newest addition to the Russian armory of torture devices, capable of producing exquisite pain in the brain of anyone strapped into the wretched machine. It had already been used successfully by the Reds to break through the hypnotic mind blocks of several captured free fighters from other cities, forcing them to reveal the locations of their hidden headquarters. And as soon as the Reds had found out, they had sent out bombers with neutron bombs and blown the populaces back into the dust from which they had been born. So there was a touch of ironic revenge, which all the Americans in the room felt while watching the Red officer strapped into the large globe. The officer, Ivan Smolenik, was dreaming. He was on a boat on the Odessa with Karenina, but the boat was crashing into rocks, and she was going under the waves. He dove down, down into the darkness. He couldn't rise, the light above him seemed to disappear, and he was being sucked into a whirlpool of pain, spinning, agonizing. His worst fears began emerging as the technician adjusted the knobs several feet away. Rats were gnawing at his hands, then his face. Razor teeth were ripping at his eyes, then moved down to his genitals. They tore away, ripping his manhood from his body, running across a nightmare red floor with a bloody organ, tearing at it, biting it into pieces. He tried to move, to punch, to kick, but his body was tightly bound in the chair.
What was in the convoy? Where were you bound? Answer, and the pain will cease.
Stop the pain, yes, I will talk! We were carrying mindbreakers to Pavlov City under direct orders from President Zhabnov himself.
How many?
How many? 2,000! Stop the pain, I beg you!
What for? What were the mindbreakers for?
For Plan Lincoln. For the Plan Lincoln that is being carried out in Pavlov City.
Plan Lincoln? What were the mindbreakers for? What's happening in this Pavlov City?
I don't know, I swear! It is some huge plan directed by the president himself, using thousands of mindbreakers. Workers are being brought in from around the country for some sort of brain modification, but I don't know what, I swear. Oh, please, God, if you are God, free me from this pain!
For what? Just tell us for what, and your pain will stop.
I don't know! Oh! I swear! Please, please, please bring back the Odessa, the boat, my Karenina in my arms! Oh, God! 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 I don't know anymore!
They had fought their way up to the 36th floor, where they were meeting stiffer resistance. The leader of the force that had been pushed up from below ran over to Roxen, holding his Kalashnikov far out ahead of him, as he still had not quite gotten used to the handling of the weapon.
We've lost nearly two-thirds of our men downstairs, Roxen. The Reds are using some kind of rifle that shoots fire. They got the whole lower portion of the building now. Christ, they must have nearly 1,000 troops down there now. They're just blasting through us. I don't know if we're ever gonna get out of here. What the hell are we gonna do?
If they're using fire, let's return the favor. There are bottles of alcohol and other flammable liquids stored in closets along the floors. Get 20 men and bring everyone you can find back here.
Freed workers came running back from all around the building to report to Roxen, who had become the general in what was turning out to be the largest battle between American and Russian forces since the landing of Soviet commando forces a century before. The men sent out to get the flammable liquids came back dragging bottle after bottle of the stuff.
Where should we put it?
Pile it all up on the stairs. Good. Now we'll wait. Looks like we won't have to wait long.
Retreating wounded workers came pouring up the stairs.
Everybody up here! Watch the bottles! Don't knock them over!
Soon, the Reds sounded like they were on the floor below, and the first spray of fire could be seen rounding the stairs.
Everybody get back!
Time to send some Reds straight to hell.
The flame-throwing troops waited a second for the smoke to clear ahead of them, not noticing the pungent stream beneath their feet.
Attention all black shirts! They're one floor above you. Engage and fire at will.
They brought their flamethrowers to bear, hoping to fry more American flesh. Instead,
that should hold them for a bit.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.